The music plays against black.
Sugar man, won't you hurry? 'Cause I'm tired of these scenes.
A car drives down a sunny coast road with semi-arid mountains rising steeply inland.
All those colors to my dreams.
The road winds along the coast, following the mountain's contours. The balding car driver sings along. He's Stephen Sugar Seegerman, record shop owner. The title reveals the scene is Cape Town, South Africa.
I got my nickname from this song. When I was in the army, they used to mispronounce Seegerman as Sugar Man. And then they just started calling me Sugar, and that became my nickname.
It's 40 years since this LP called Cold Fact by Rodriguez was released. And in South Africa, it was a very popular album. It was one of the biggest albums of the day. But the thing was, we didn't know who this guy was. All our other rock stars, we had all the information we needed. But this guy, there was nothing. And then we found out that he had committed suicide. He set himself alight on stage and burned to death in front of the audience. It was the most incredible thing. It wasn't just a suicide, it was probably the most grotesque suicide in rock history.
The sun begins to set in a warm amber glow on the coastal highway. A Red Box Films and Passion Pictures production. In association with Canfield Pictures and The Documentary Company. A film by Malik Benjalul. Produced by Simon Chin and Malik Benjalul. The titles appear against a background of out-of-focus photo cuttings. Executive producer, John Batsek. Director of Photography, Camilla Skagerstrom, FSF. Co-producers for Passion Pictures, George Chignall and Nicole Stott. For Hysteria Film, Mala Grapengieser. Searching for Sugar Man. The photo cuttings are on card and arranged so that from one angle they form a panoramic photo of a city by a river. The photo becomes an aerial view at dusk and pans across the cityscape. The city seems to reach to the horizon. Mist hangs beneath a red sky. Red lights shine on chimney stacks, and more red lights spell out Music Hall. Original songs by Rodriguez. The city fades to black. Fade up on a nighttime scene with lightning flickering above city high-rises. A title announces Detroit, Michigan, USA. The lightning illuminates a wet city crossroads. A train runs along an elevated track. The view becomes a drawing and a date appears, 1968. Dennis Coffey, co-producer of Rodriguez's first album, Cold Fact, from 1970. Also worked with Marvin Gaye, Stevie Wonder, The Temptations, The Supremes, Gladys Knight, Ringo Starr, The Four Tops, and Wilson Pickett.
The first time that I remember actually recognizing him is Mike Theodore called me on the phone one day and said, I have this artist I want you to come see with me. This guy's name is Rodriguez. He's working down by the Detroit River. There's a bar down there, down by the Wharf Riverside District. Let's go see him tonight. I think you'll really like him. So that night I remember we pull up, way in this kind of isolated part of Detroit, right on the side of the Detroit River. And you could see the mist in the air coming off the river. We could feel it. And we went inside there. And as we walked in the door, we could hear behind us the sound of the freighters as they're going down the river. And so it's like you're walking out of like a Sherlock Holmes novel. You walk out of the mist and you go into this place, and inside the place it's all full of smoke, so there's a mist inside there.
Boom, hey, it's a wall of smoke. Beer all over the place, peanut shell, it was just a mess. And then you hear this strumming sound, strumming and batting the guitar. And then you hear this voice, strange voice.
Finally, we walked through the smoke, and I looked, and there in the far corner I saw, I could see the shadow of a man, and I couldn't see his face. I said, what's the deal? So we got a little closer.
And you see this guy with his back to you. So all you see is his back, and he's in a corner singing. It was ethereal scene, if you will. Foggy night, foghorn, smoke so thick you couldn't see through it. And here's this voice.
Maybe it forced you to listen to the lyrics because you couldn't see the guy's face. And that's when we talked to him and figured we needed to do an album on him. The only writer that I had heard of that time period was maybe Bob Dylan, that was writing that well.
Also speaking was Mike Theodore, co-producer of Cold Fact. A sketch drawing becomes an animation of a dingy club called The Sewer. The view pans along to Jimmy's cleaners next door, and a guy with a guitar on his back, walking through falling snow.
Was it a huntsman or a player that made you pay the cost, that now assumes relaxed positions and prostitutes your loss? Were you tortured by your own thirst in those pleasures that you seek, that made you Tom the Curious, that makes you James the Weak?
The view moves on to a Mexican market, advertising a full line of Mexican groceries, and the high wall of Olympic steel.
And you claim you got something going, something you call unique, but I've seen your self-pity showing as the tears roll down your cheeks.
He was this wandering spirit around the city. And sometimes I might catch him in the corner. You know, Detroit's got its share of burned out, desolate areas. And I would occasionally see him far away from the brewery, and I wondered, and it just added to this mythology of him. Like, well, what is he doing? What is he doing? What does he do? I heard he did a little roofing, some construction work. I think that's how he got his money at the time. He just was, you know, and I say this with love, I say this with respect, but I thought he was just just not much more than a kind of a homeless person, you know? He just was a drifter. He was just, I didn't know if he had a home, you know? He'd look like maybe he'd go from shelter to shelter or something.
Dan DiMaggio, bartender at the brewery. The view moves across the dreary, snowy nighttime city.
Detroit in the 70s was a hard place. Well, it's still a hard place. A lot of decay, lots of ruined houses. Real poverty exists in this city. And those streets were Rodriguez's natural habitat. Anytime we met him to talk about what we were doing, he would always meet us on the corner somewhere in his neighborhood. Most of the time, it wasn't coming to my house. He'd say, meet me on the corner of this street and that street. And we would be there. Mike and I would get out of our cars and park our cars, and we'd be standing on the corner, and then we'd look around and he'd be there all of a sudden. He'd just show up. We thought he was like the inner city poet, you know, putting his poems to music of what he saw. And it was definitely a very gritty look at what he saw in the streets of Detroit, what he saw in his neighborhood, who was walking around the streets, and the way he presented it in the song, I thought was very, very interesting.
We were working at Thurs from a recording studio. When he opened up and sang, he went, whoa, this guy's got it. Rodriguez, at that time, had all the machinery in place, big names, big money behind it. Circumstances were right. Why didn't it make it? That's the big question that today still haunts me. Did he get enough promotion? Did he do enough performances? Was he too political? Was there this or was there that? Should it have been green instead of orange? Should it have been a violin instead of an oboe? On and on you could go. But the end of the day is, if you listen to the stuff now, you'd say, I don't understand it. He's right on.
Jerome Ferretti, bricklayer.
I only heard him play once, and one of the songs that he had on his album, it was called The Sugar Man. Was it Sugar Man? Is that the name of the song? I knew that guy, the Sugar Man, and his name was Volkswagen Frank. And he lived right around the corner and used to go over to Volkswagen Frank's. You could go in and get a little sugar, if you know what I mean.
Sugar Man, won't you hurry? 'Cause I'm tired of these scenes. For a blue coin, won't you bring back all those colors to my dreams?
Sugar Man was released in 1970. A car drives down a desert road in Palm Springs, California, USA. The camera follows gray-haired Steve Roland into his home. He produced Rodriguez's second album, Coming From Reality, in 1971. Also worked with Jerry Lee Lewis, The Cure, Peter Frampton, Gloria Gaynor, Boney M., and The Pretty Things.
On a lonely, dusty road, lost my heart.
I've got some photos here that I'd like to show you that I've kept since my days in England with Rodriguez. Let me see. Possibly it's in this book. I don't know where. And these are all my photos from when I was acting. That's me, and that's Jimmy Dean. That was in 1955. Hang on, I think I found them. I think they're in here. Yeah, here they are. Wow, good Lord, here they are. You know, I haven't seen these pictures in almost 35 years. He's my most memorable artist. You know, I've produced a lot of great ones, but he's my most memorable. It's not just a talent. He's like a wise man, a prophet. He's way beyond just being a musical artist. And he probably could have done fantastically well if he had continued. When I met him, they said, Rodriguez, this is Steve Roland. He really likes your album. And Rodriguez said to me, well, did you like Cold Colfax? I said, man, I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I can't believe that this album didn't do anything. It's just a fantastic album. So he played me what his next album was. In those days, he had cassettes. He had demos of this next album. He was going to call Coming From Reality. And I said, wow, man, this has got to be a smash. These are great songs. Little bit different from the others. I said, but great songs. I said, and a couple of them were so sad. You know, there's one in there that's absolutely a killer. It's one of the saddest songs that, I'm laughing, but it's one of the saddest songs that I've ever heard. And it's a very simple song. Hang on, I want to play this. Hang on. Okay, listen to these words.
Cause I lost my job 2 weeks before Christmas.
Oh, man.
And I talked to Jesus at the sewer. And the Pope said it was none of his goddamn business.
The scene cuts to Rodriguez sitting on steps on the cover of Coming From Reality.
While the rain drank champagne, my Estonian archangel came and got me wasted. 'Cause the sweetest kiss I ever got is the one I've never tasted.
The song is Cause from 1971.
And it really makes me sad because that was the last song that we recorded. And that was the last song that Rodriguez ever recorded. And what makes it even sadder was the album was released in November of 1971. We expected big things, and it did absolutely nothing. And then, 2 weeks before Christmas, Sussex dropped him off the label. And the very first line in the song, as if premonition was, I lost my job 2 weeks before Christmas. Oh, man. I just think about that. This guy deserves recognition. Nobody in America had even heard of him. Nobody even was interested in listening to him. How can that be? How can that be? A guy that writes like this.
I mean, Steve shakes his head.
'Cause they told me everybody's gotta pay their dues. And I explained that I had overpaid them. Because the smell of her perfume echoes in my head still.
There are photos of Rodriguez walking down a street, standing by a boxcar with a guitar over his shoulder, and a collection of photos on a wall. He wears dark glasses in every single one. A mountain peak is shrouded in mist in Cape Town, South Africa. The view pans to a shop called Mabu Vinyl. We buy and sell records, CDs and DVDs. The window's plastered with posters. Sugar steps outside and carries a signboard into the shop.
I wonder how many times you've been had, and I wonder how many plans have gone bad.
Inside, there are artist posters on the walls, and people browse through racks of records.
Well, it's still a bit of a mystery how the first copy of Cold Fact actually came to South Africa, but one of the stories I've heard is that there was an American girl, and she came to South Africa to visit a boyfriend and brought a copy of the record with her. And her and him and all the friends really liked it and went out to try and buy it, but you couldn't buy it. So they started taping copies and passing copies along. However it got here, however it germinated here, once it got here, it spread very quickly.
70s footage shows people on the roof of a terminal watching a plane arrive and passengers deplane at DF Malan Airport. Kids play a game on a terrace. Young women wander in a field and pick pink blooms from large bushes. Willem Muller, musician.
I was in high school and we heard the song I Wonder. How many times you've had sex. At that time, South Africa was very conservative. It was the height of apartheid. And there wasn't television here. That's how conservative it was, because television was communist. It was really, you won't believe. Everything was restricted, everything was censored, everything was. And here's this guy singing this song. Who's that? So that's Rodriguez. And he became something of a rebel sort of icon. But the strange thing was that we all bought his records. Everybody I knew had his records. I Wonder, and that was the big song that everybody was singing, and we all bought a record. And there he was on the cover, and sort of a hippie with shades. But nobody knew anything about him. He was a mystery. Unlike other artists that you could read about from America, we could read about and, you know, get to know something about him. No, zilch. Nobody knew anything. He was a mystery. We only had this picture on the cover of the record.
Now you sit there thinking, feeling insecure, the mocking court gesture.
Old home movie footage from the 70s shows a road through hills in South Africa and a family by the roadside with the father taking shots of a view across grassy scrubland. A herd of zebra amble down a dusty track and a single peak stands tall, an almost perfect triangle, shot from a moving vehicle.
And you think I'm curious.
The album was exceptionally popular. To many of us South Africans, he was the soundtrack to our lives. In the mid-70s, if you walked into a random white liberal middle-class household that had a turntable and a pile of pop records, and if you flipped through the records, you would always see Abbey Road by the Beatles, you would always see Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon & Garfunkel, and you would always see Cold Fact by Rodriguez. To us, it was one of the most famous records of all time. The message it had was be anti-establishment. And the one song's called the Anti-Establishment Blues. We didn't know what the word anti-establishment was until it cropped up on a Rodriguez song. And then we found out it's okay to protest against your society, to be angry with your society.
Because we lived in a society where every means was used to prevent apartheid from you know, coming to an end, this album somehow had in it lyrics that almost set us free as oppressed peoples. Any revolution needs an anthem, and in South Africa, Cold Fact was the album that gave people permission to free their minds and to start thinking differently.
Craig Bartholomew Strydom, music journalist. In footage from the 70s, crowds protest against apartheid and are attacked by police with batons.
Vote day, the system's gonna fall soon to an angry young tune, and that's a concrete cold fact.
It may seem strange that South African record companies didn't do more to try and track down Rodriguez, but actually, if you look back at the time, we were in the middle of apartheid, the height of apartheid. South Africa was under sanctions from countries from all over the world. South African musicians were not allowed to play overseas. No foreign acts were allowed to visit South Africa. It was a closed-door situation between South Africa and the rest of the world.
Woke up this morning with an ache in my head.
There are protesters with banners, scuffles between the protesters and the police, and the army are on the streets. A soldier opens fire. Bodies lie in a street. A tall, white-haired politician waves from the steps of a government building.
The countries around the world were saying horrible things about the apartheid government, but we didn't know because they controlled the news. The majority of the population had been marginalized and forced out of e-commerce and areas. It was what had happened in Nazi Germany. It was a spin-off from Nazi Germany. But if a newspaper published it, they'd get prosecuted. So because of that, South Africa had achieved a pariah status in the world. There were cultural boycotts, there were sporting boycotts. It was a very isolated society, so we were cut off. We all knew apartheid was wrong, but living in South Africa, there wasn't much as a white person you could do about it because the government was very strict. It was a military state to a large degree. If you spoke out against apartheid, you could be thrown into prison for 3 years. So although a lot of whites were part of the struggle, the majority of whites were not. You were watched, there were spies. It was scary and people were scared. But out of the Afrikaans community emerged a group of Afrikaans musicians, songwriters, and for them, when they heard Rodriguez, it was like a voice spoke to them and said, guys, there's a way out. There's a way out. You can write music, you can write imagery, you can sing, you can perform. And that was where really the first opposition to apartheid came from inside the Afrikaans community. It was these young Afrikaans guys, and to a man, they'll tell you that they were influenced by Rodriguez. Koos Kombes, Willem Moller, the late Johannes Kerkorrel, the guys who are regarded as the icons of the Afrikaans music revolution, will all tell you Rodriguez was our guy.
We call it a full frame movement of Afrikaans artists singing against apartheid. All of us listened to Rodriguez at some point, all of us. It had an enormous impact. It made you just think that there's another way. What's presented to you by this establishment isn't all there is.
Willem Muller, member of the Full Frame movement. Newspaper headlines announce alternative Afrikaners and Potch University bans cultural rebels.
The biggest hit was a song called Sit It Off, which was when P.W. Botha was the president then, the real bad guy. When he came on TV, he used to talk like that. And this song said, switch it off, just switch off the TV.
P.W. Botha points aggressively on a TV, which is switched off. Shelves are crammed with files at the Archive of Censored Material, Johannesburg, South Africa.
So what lines do you think were the lines they had problem with?
Oh, gee whiz, it's all of them. Sugar man, won't you hurry, cos I'm tired of these scenes. For a blue coin, won't you bring back all those colours to my dreams? The most difficult ones is probably silver magic ships you carry, jumpers, coke, sweet Mary Jane.
And what is that?
I'm going to leave that to you.
But it's drugs.
It's certainly drugs. During the apartheid years, it was just impossible to play it.
And what happened if you didn't play it?
Well, you couldn't. I'd like to show you why.
Ilse Assman, former apartheid archivist.
Right, here we have the album, the vinyl. At the back of the sleeve, you see a sticker that says avoid. But when you open the album and take it out from its sleeve, you would see that they have scratched that particular song with a sharp tool to make sure that it would not go out on air. And that's the way that they banned the music, which in my mind was quite a brutal way of ensuring the song would never be heard on the air.
Most of those tracks were on the banned list at SABC, and they ran the broadcast industry
completely. There weren't any independent radio stations or TV stations. Obviously, when that word got out, it just made the record more desirable. You know, it's like having something banned. You're 16, 17 years old, and you've got something that's banned. It was absolutely perfect.
Steve M. Harris, Rodriguez's former South African label boss. Cut to Cape Town, South Africa. An outside lift rises to give a view of the modern concrete, steel and glass city. As the lift rises, the sea comes into view in the distance. The song is Can't Get Away from 1973.
Born in the troubled city, in rock and roll USA, in the shadow of the tallest building, I vowed I would break away. Listen to the Sunday actors, but all they would ever say, that you can't get away.
Traffic moves along a tree-lined boulevard towards a hill outside the city.
Well, Cold Fact was just one of the albums we had in our collections, and for 10, 20 years, it was just a record we listened to and enjoyed. But then a pivotal event happened that changed everything for me. We were down in Camps Bay Beach. We were sitting around on the beach, and a friend of mine, a woman, who was from South Africa, but she had got married and immigrated to Los Angeles. She said to me, where can I buy Cold Fact in South Africa? And I turned around and I pointed to, there was a store across the road that sold CDs. And I said, you can buy it at that store. She said, really? Because, you know, you can't buy it anywhere in America. I've asked everywhere in America, no one's even heard of it. And that was a pivotal moment because I didn't know that. I thought everybody knew Rodriguez, especially in America, because he was American. So my next thought was, oh, Rodriguez, you know, that's interesting. I went back, I came back home and I took out my Rodriguez records, and that's when I realized there was nothing on the record to tell us who he was or where he was from. On Cold Fact, there are four names. On the front cover, it just says Rodriguez. But if we take the record out and examine the sleeve, the artist's name is Sisto Rodriguez. But if you look at the tracks, six of these tracks are credited to Jesus Rodriguez, and four of these tracks are credited to Sixth Prince. So who actually wrote these songs and who are all these people? We didn't have any more information than a record with him sitting on the cover with a hat and sunglasses on. We didn't know how tall he was because he was sitting cross-legged. So how do you solve a mystery? You use whatever information's available. What did we have? A record cover with lyrics. So we started looking quite deeply at the lyrics and seeing what they said, and some of them, very few of them, had geographical references. The one in Can't Get Away starts off, born in the troubled city in rock and roll USA. Born in which troubled city? Seems all the cities were troubled in the late 60s. In the shadow of the tallest building. The tallest building, as far as we knew, was in New York. And at the bottom of the song, this verse says, in a hotel room in Amsterdam. Then it says, going down a dusty Georgian side road, I wonder, Georgia? So we've had Amsterdam, we've had Georgia, we've had the world's tallest building. Not much to go on.
A sign outside a bar at night advertises the Motor City Brewing Works. The view becomes a pencil sketch.
Well, what I heard, and the story differs a lot, and a lot of people have different versions of the story, but what I heard, he hadn't played a concert in a very long time, and a promoter got him to play a concert, and you know, he was hoping this was going to be a great show. Of course, the show didn't work out that way. It started out, the sound wasn't good, the venue wasn't good, a lot of the factors surrounding the show wasn't good, and as the show went on and on, it started going downhill from there. People started ridiculing him, people started whistling or you know, making mention of the fact that you know, the show wasn't going as planned. And it got to a point where just very quietly, very gently, he just sang his last song. Thanks for your time, you can thank me for mine. And after that said, forget it. And he reached down and pulled up a gun and pulled the trigger. And that was the dramatic, very dramatic ending to what was actually a non-career.
Craig Bartholomew Stridham, music journalist. A pencil sketch of a headline reads, Superstar Suicides. A view of Cape Town after dark and a dramatic blazing sunrise. A modern VW Golf drives up a hill on the outskirts of the city with a view across a bay and stops on a leafy street. Stephen Sugar Siegerman gets out.
In 1996, the South African record label released Rodriguez's second album, Coming From Reality,
on CD for the first time in South Africa. And because they thought I knew a lot about him, they asked if I wanted to co-write the liner notes for the booklet, which I did. And I'll read some of it to you. They start off by saying, if ever there is an air of intrigue and mystery around a pop artist, it is around the artist known as Rodriguez. There's no air of intrigue and mystery around him anywhere else in the world because his two albums, Coming From Reality and Cold Fact, were monumental flops everywhere else. And this is the important part. There were no concrete cold facts about the artist known as Rodriguez, any musicologist detectives out there. And that's the line that changed everything.
I started searching for Rodriguez when a few of us were sitting around in the army and somebody said, how did Rodriguez die? And just coincidence, at the time I was looking for subject matter to write an article. I remember having like 5 points on the piece of paper and number four or something was find out how Rodriguez died. You know, I thought it would make a good story. So that was in the back of my mind for many years. And then many years later, I came across this re-release of Coming From Reality, and inside, the liner notes said, there were no concrete cold facts about the artist known as Rodriguez. Any musicologist detectives out there was the question. And I think that to me was like an invitation. I thought, well, maybe it's me.
Craig Bartholomew Stridham.
The first way I tried to find him was to just follow the money. Normally you follow the money. That's how you get to the bottom of anything. But where do dead man's money go? I was astounded that no one knew anything about him. I guess it was reminiscent of how bad the music industry was. I mean, they're renowned for ripping people off. And it is one thing if they had said to me, oh yeah, we send the money to X place or Y or whatever, but they just kept on being very vague. And in fact, when I put some pressure on somebody, I did get an address and I called, and I can't remember if I spoke to someone or left a message, but when I called the next day, the number had been changed. And that to me was, I mean, that's a gift for anyone who wants to be a detective, is an obstacle, because an obstacle is an inspiration. If you just find things easily, they're not inspiring. And this was a great obstacle that somebody had changed their number. I mean, I just smelt a dirty money story somewhere there.
So if you compare to other artists, how big was it actually?
Every month, it just sold. And every party you went to and every place you went to, you'd hear that album at least once. I don't think I could even think of how many albums he sold here, because it's a long period of time.
What could be probable?
Robbie Mann of RPM Records, Rodriguez's first South African label.
I'd have to guess maybe 500,000 copies over that period of time. It's a lot of records. Especially for a small country, a gold record 10 times over.
Rodriguez never got to know that he was big in South Africa. How could it be?
Don't know. I mean, everything would have been... I find that strange. I have no idea.
But you must have sent royalties somewhere.
Of course we sent royalties. We sent royalties to A&M Records. I remember the label. It was A&M Sussex. Whether they had a partnership or whatever they had, I don't, you know. So my suggestion is if you can find out whoever the person was who owned Sussex Records, then you will find out what happened to the money.
Because it's weird, isn't it?
It's very strange. Very strange.
How popular was the album? Was he as famous as, you know, the Rolling Stones and the Doors, was it?
Oh, it was much bigger than Rolling Stones. Absolutely, in the time, yeah.
When you released Ricky, did you try to contact him?
No, not at all. You know, because at the time, the legend was, yeah, I was an artist. This was like Jimi Hendrix. It was Jimi Hendrix catalog. So you're going to understand, if you just got Jimi Hendrix and you got the license for this territory, you're obviously not going to go try get hold of Jimi Hendrix because he's dead.
But who did you pay royalties to?
To Sussex Music.
To Clarence?
Yes. Well, to Sussex Music, which is his company, yeah.
So I decided to make a diagram, write down the whole path and trail that I was trying to work on, all the various touch points, all the record companies, all the people that had dealings with Rodriguez and his album at some point. I made this whole document. So I found out there were 3 record companies in South Africa that had released Rodriguez's records. Finally discovering that led to a record company in America. It was the company that had been signing Rodriguez and creating his first album called Sussex. I then did my research on Sussex. That led me to discovering who the owner of Sussex Records was, Clarence Avant. Clarence Avant, he'd been the head of Motown, one of the most prestigious jobs to have in a record company industry. So I did my research, I tried everything to get hold of Clarence Avant, but
I just got to a lot of closed doors. I could not get hold of him.
Cars drive along a tree-lined street in Hollywood, California. An elderly man sits wearily waiting to be interviewed. He's Clarence Avant, former owner of Sussex Records.
I don't know if you've ever seen this picture.
That's him. That's Rodriguez. I don't know when this was made. I have absolutely no idea.
That's 1970, I think.
Yeah. This is my man.
Clarence, the former chairman of Motown Records, shakes his head sadly.
Man, don't get me emotional again. Shit. You made me emotional. I ain't getting emotional no more, but you're sitting here talking to you, man. If I had to name 10 artists that I've ever been involved with, Rodriguez would be in the top five. Simple as that. There's nothing I've ever heard anything like him. People say, well, Bob Dylan, this. No. Bob Dylan was mild to this guy. Did it make any money? We judge things here in America. If you say, was it the top 100? Was it number, to get on the charts as number 12? Did there was a lot of radio play? The answer is no, man. Nobody didn't, Rodriguez? You know, that name didn't register. Although he looked like he was a white guy, but again, still, Rodriguez, everybody knew Rodriguez, that's a Spanish name, a Latin name. Latin music was not happening then.
How many records do you think he sold in America?
In America, 6. Maybe my wife bought them, maybe my daughter, boy, she couldn't buy them. Maybe Neil Bogart got one, maybe Dennis and Mike. It didn't sell here. And there was some excitement about him. A couple of agents heard him and wanted to bring him to California. And when he came to California, he was nervous and he turned his back to the audience and everybody said, well, what the hell is this?
But the thing is that the guy sold hundreds of thousands of records in another country.
Well, I'm going to South Africa to try to chase somebody selling records? Shit, no, man.
But did you know that he was big in South Africa?
Rodriguez, young man, never happened in so far as I'm concerned. Period.
But if I'm really going to try to track down the money, how should I do?
Well, is that important, the money? Or which is important? Rodriguez's story, or you worrying about the money? If only, how many people in South Africa? 40 million people? How many people?
40 million people live in South Africa.
Well, I mean, so they've been freed for how long? 3 hours?
So
what the fuck's that supposed to mean? You told me at lunch they scratch records because they wouldn't let them live. So underground movement, how big was it?
He sold half a million records in South Africa.
Well, so he sold half a million records. So what? I don't know who you sold them to. How many distributors did you have? I have no idea.
There are three record labels. I spoke to all the record label bosses in South Africa who has released his records. It was...
Go back to him and tell him to send me an account. You think if somebody's going to worry about a 1970 contract? If you do, you're out of your goddamn mind. Buddha Records out of business. I'm out of business. So you think they give a shit about that? I know I wouldn't.
Notes are made in a copybook.
I'd been looking for information about Rodriguez for a long time. I'd even set up a webpage called The Great Rodriguez Hunt in the hope that someone out there in cyberspace would post a message on the forum giving us any information about Rodriguez. But there was nothing. At that stage, I met Craig, who was the musicologist detective who had read my liner notes and who was also searching for Rodriguez, and he flew down to Cape Town and we met in a coffee shop and we exchanged all the information we had. But unfortunately, we had very little. And at that stage, I remember we felt it was probably best that we just stopped.
So basically, I was lost. I'd come to a dead end. I couldn't find him. I didn't know where to look anymore. I'd even visited the places that he sang about. I'd been to London, nothing. Been to Amsterdam, he sings about Amsterdam, nothing. And one day, I'd basically given up. I thought, well, this is it. And one day, just by accident, I was listening to the album in the car and I heard the song Inner City Blues. Great song, and the line came up, I met a girl in Dearborn early 6 o'clock this morning, a cold fact. And I thought, hang on a minute, I'd never checked out Dearborn. I didn't even know if it was a city, but then I thought, actually, that sounds like a town or a city. And I thought, hang on, let me check it out in an atlas. So I went through to my old atlas and pulled it out and thought, let me see what I could find here. Let me see if I could find Dearborn.
Then I found it. Dearborn, Wayne, Michigan, F7.
Craig flicks to the relevant page in the heavy old atlas.
F7. Dearborn, part of Detroit. That was a huge breakthrough in my mind. Detroit, home of Motown, Marvin Gaye, Stevie Wonder, and eventually Mike Theodore, the producer of the album.
A title forms, August 1997. Mike Theodore.
I was sitting in my condo, just having a cup of coffee. I was looking out the window, watching the ocean. Phone rings. It's a long-distance call from South Africa, from a writer. His name's Craig Bartholomew. And he starts telling me this amazing story. So he said, do you know that Rodriguez has been selling in South Africa for 25 years? These albums are selling millions. I said, what? Then he's sitting there and he wants to start telling me some stories about, he said, how did Rodriguez die? And he's telling me information that he had, that Rodriguez had blown his brains out on stage or set himself on fire and killed himself.
I had 100 questions I wanted to ask. I mean, I was just hoping I could get all my questions in, you know. Why did he write this lyric? Why did he write that lyric? Where did he record this album? Where did he record that album? And we got talking and asked him a lot of questions, and it was amazing. It was a roller coaster ride of questions and answers, and it was a euphoric moment of just having finally broken through and discovered something. And finally I got to the one question I wanted to know the answer of, was how did Rodriguez die? Did he blow himself up on stage, or what is this dramatic story? Let's open up the lid on this right away and find out what happened. And Mike Theodore was, what do you mean dead? He's not dead. Sixto is alive. He's alive and kicking. The principal artist known as Sixto Rodriguez is alive and kicking and living in Detroit.
Birds fly across a pink tinted sky.
I can't remember who called me and said they found him. I said, no, you're shitting me. This is, yeah. At first I thought it was a hoax. I thought somebody was faking it. You know, it's like going into Tutankhamun's tomb and finding the mummy, you know, like, wow, he lives.
I remember dancing on the spot when I was staying on the phone, and Craig and I were jumping up and down saying, we found him. That was the most exciting thing. We'd actually done it.
Waves roll up a beach. Just a song we shared out here brings memories back when you were here, of your smile, your easy laughter, of your kiss, those moments after, I think of you. A seagull flies along the beach in twilight.
So that was it. I come to the point, it was the end of the story. I was searching for a dead man. One morning I discovered a living man. And to me, that was the end of the story. I wrote my article. I called it Looking for Jesus. I faxed it to many individuals, many people involved. But somehow, this article made its way across the Atlantic and into the hands of someone in America. And what I thought was the end of story was actually just the beginning of another story. And the best part was still to come.
A young woman enters a house in Sunshine.
Because I don't know where it is. It might take a while. They do have the dates. 3-year search for dead singer. Yes. August 97. I was in Kansas. I got a copy of it to me at work. I was on a 24-hour shift. And then I went online, and that's when I discovered the website. When I went online, there was this milk carton with a picture. And it said, wanted, and have you seen this man? I was like, matter of fact, I have seen him before. You know, I replied, Rodriguez is my father. I'm serious. Do you really want to know about my father? Sometimes a fantasy is better left alive. I don't know why I said that, but anyway, I did. And then I gave him email address, phone numbers, anything that they wanted to contact me, and he phoned me.
Eva Rodriguez, Rodriguez's eldest daughter. An aerial view of dawn in Cape Town.
Well, we'd found out that Rodriguez was alive. I'd spoken to Craig, and I came to work, and Alex McCrindle, who was the guy I worked on the website with, said, you're not going to believe
what's on the website. And on the website was a forum where people could post messages. And there was a message that said, "My name's Eva, I'm Rodriguez's daughter." She'd left a phone number and she said, "I'd like to speak to someone in connection with this." So that night, I phoned her. I said, "Hi, I'm Sugar." She said, "I'm Eva." And we had the most amazing conversation. She explained to me who her father was, what he had done, where he had been. She asked me who I was, and I explained why my name was Sugar and how I was involved with the website. And then at the end, I said to her, "This has been the most amazing thing for me. And what would be really great is if I could at some point speak to your dad. I'd love it if I could just say hello to him." Because for me, this was sort of the end of the search, and I just wanted to speak to this man. I mean, I went to bed. And 1 o'clock in the morning that night, the phone rang. And my wife answered it because it was her side of the bed. And I remember she picked up the phone and her face, she changed. She had this look of awe. She said, "It's him." And I was in shock. I'd been sleeping and I ran into the other room, into my study. And I picked up the phone and she put hers down. And I said, "Hello." And a voice said,
"Hello, is that Sugar?"
And I knew. I just knew, because I knew that voice. I'd heard that voice so many times on the records, I knew it was him. I was talking to Rodriguez. That for me was one of the greatest moments of my life.
Golden Sun reflects off a still river and illuminates the fumes rising from factory chimneys. A passenger jet climbs towards the sun in the distance. The song is Sandriven Lullaby from 1971. Cut to a down-at-heel townhouse, with logs piled on the small wooden porch. A figure moves behind a window, set in a stained, uneven red brick wall. The window's pulled up, and a man with dark hair and dark glasses looks out. Rodriguez himself. With an enigmatic expression, he moves back inside. Rodriguez pulls on a jacket, his movements slow and unhurried.
Whenever you're ready.
Okay.
And is this all right? Should I be doing something, though? Should I have a glass of water or something? Is that right?
Do you want?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, this is I'm supposed to be comfortable.
With a wry half-smile, he sips a glass of water, then sits thoughtfully, leaning against his fist with his elbow on the table, looking out of the window.
So run the question to me again, just so I can hear it in my head.
In the 70s and 80s, did you ever get any contact from South Africa?
No, I didn't. Maybe they didn't have a contact number or something, but no, I didn't.
How does that feel? You weren't aware of something that would have changed your life completely. I mean, probably to the better.
Well, I don't know if it would have been for the better, but it's certainly a thought, you know.
But wouldn't it have been nice to know that you were a superstar?
Well...
He bites his lip, then shakes his head with a smile.
I don't know what to respond to that.
After coming from reality, did you want to continue making albums?
I would like to continue, but nothing beats reality. So yeah, pretty much went back to work.
What did you do?
I do hired labor. I demolition, renovation of buildings, of homes. Yeah. Restoration of yeah.
Did you enjoy that?
I do. It keeps the blood circulating, keeps you fit, yeah.
But it's quite far away from music.
Yeah, quite a bit. Quite a different contrast, yeah.
Did you continue making music on your own?
I do. I play guitar. I love playing guitar. But I do love to listen. I like to go see the shows and things. But I do get about.
Outside Rodriguez's house, the sun's coming up and there's snow on the ground. The property is bordered by a chain-link fence. Rodriguez leaves the house in a long dark coat and trilby hat, wearing sunglasses. Street Boy from 1971.
Street Boy, you've been out too long. Street Boy, ain't you got enough sense to go home? street boy, you're gonna end up alone. You need some love and understanding, not that dead in life you're planning, street boy.
Rodriguez slips and slides his way along uncleared snowy streets, taking his hands out of his pockets for balance. He's not wearing gloves.
You go home, but you can't stay, because something's always pulling you away. You're fast hellos and quick goodbyes. You're just a street boy with the street lights in your eyes.
Next, Regan Rodriguez.
You better get your
Rodriguez's youngest daughter.
Look for something better.
You never said anything about being disappointed. We just move on to continue to survive because you can't just give up.
What did you do instead?
He read a lot. He was involved in politics. He was involved in the community. He would attend protests and rallies if those were causes that he believed in. He would take us along. He was always a proponent of working for the people that maybe didn't always have a voice or didn't have a chance to speak up, the working class, the working poor. He had a lot of experience in that area.
He approached the work from a different place than most people do. He took it very, very seriously, sort of like a sacrament, you know. He was going to do this dirty, dirty work for 8 or 10 hours, okay? But he was dressed in a tuxedo. He had this kind of magical quality that all genuine poets and artists have, to elevate things, to get above the mundane, the prosaic, all the bullshit, all the mediocrity that's everywhere. The artist is the pioneer. Even his musical hopes were dashed, the spirit remained, and he just had to keep finding a place, refining the process of how to apply himself. He knew that there was something more. It was in the early 80s. He wanted to do something righteous, make a difference. So lo and behold, he told me that he was gonna run for mayor. And I thought, well, God bless you, Rodriguez. You know, if you can become mayor of Detroit, then anything is possible.
Rick Emerson, construction worker, colleague. A sequence of black and white photos of Rodriguez in decaying urban settings.
You're such a drag, won't go back. Cause Papa don't allow no new ideas here.
Some old items from Rodriguez.
Regan takes a shoebox from a drawer.
This is his bumper sticker from the first time he ran for city council. And I think this is a copy of the ballot. He didn't win an election ever. 139. There were 169 candidates. 9 get elected. They spelled his name wrong.
On the ballot, it's spelled with a Q in place of the G in Rodriguez. A photo shows Rodriguez with his kids as children, eating candy floss. Eva.
My relatives are, my mother's side of the family are European and Native American. And my father's family is Mexican. My grandfather came from Mexico. The Mexican came to Detroit to work in the auto factories. So we're working class people, blue collar workers, hard labor. We lived in 26 different homes, and some houses didn't have bedrooms, some houses, you know, didn't have bathrooms, and they weren't homes. They were just places that we lived. But just because people are poor or have little doesn't mean that, you know, their dreams aren't big and their soul isn't rich, you know, and a lot of, you know, that's where the classes and the prejudice come from, is that there is a difference between you and me, and there's a difference between them and us.
Images of urban decay.
I've played every kind of gig there is to play now. I've played faggot bars, hooker bars, motorcycle funerals, in opera houses, concert halls, halfway houses. Well, I found in all these places that I've played, all the people that I've played for, the same people. So if you'll listen, maybe you'll see someone you know in this song.
A most disgusting song.
He wasn't just doing your average carpentry. You know, he was really cleaning out the house. I mean, doing the work that no one else wanted to do. Really, no one else wanted to do that work. He would come home, he would be covered in dust and dirt, paint chips from his day's work, long days. I saw him take refrigerators down on his back downstairs. It was just a day at work for him, but I knew he was a harder worker than a lot of other fathers that I knew of.
It's a city that tells you not to dream big, not to expect anything more, but he always took me to places that only certain elite people would be able to go, so he kind of instilled in me that I can go anywhere I want, regardless of, you know, what my bank statement says, and I'm going, you know, so that's kind of how he was. He showed me, you know, the top floors of places. I said, I'm just as good as they are, you know.
He majored in philosophy in university. My dad gave us a lot of exposure to the arts. He would let us go into the libraries and the museums and the science centers, and where that was our daycare. And we, you know, toured the halls of the museum and saw Diego Rivera and, you know, all Picasso and Delacroix. And we began to learn of life outside of the city. And that's in books and paintings and in music.
Sandra Rodriguez Kennedy, Rodriguez's middle daughter, followed by Eva. The song is Lifestyles from 1971.
Frozen children in her city. Walkers in the paper rain, waiting for those nights that never came. The hijack trying so hard to be pretty.
Rodriguez slips and slides his way through the snow, past decaying buildings with snow-covered slag heaps and factories in the background.
Winds of my thought.
He stumbles through fresh, ankle-deep snow.
She laughed when I tried to tell her. Hello only ends in goodbye.
The sun's going down in a bronze haze as Rodriguez approaches home, and the welcoming glow of a light on the small porch.
Well, I started playing when I was 16, and the thing is, it was a family guitar. And I played a lot of bars in the city and clubs in the city, small rooms, and I met Mike at Theater and Dennis Coffey, and they came to the club to see me play. I had a gig at a place called The Sewer, right off the Detroit River there. And then we got a record deal from Clarence Avant, so that's how it started. But all those early years were, you know, a lot of work. I was at a Chrysler plant called Dodge, Maine, and I also worked at Alden on Lynch Road in Detroit, worked at the heat treat department, so stuff like that. A lot of heavy labor. But it was a great year for me, this Colfax thing. You know, I had achieved what I was trying to do, is get a product, you know. And it was going very well, I thought, you know. How did it feel? It was a great feeling of accomplishment, you know. It's actualization.
Did you believe that it was a good album?
I did my best with it. The reviews were good on it, and I thought it was good, yeah. I'm not the one to ask that, though. That's a question, too, you know? But you go ahead, yeah.
Were you surprised that it didn't sell?
Was I surprised? It's a music business, so there's no guarantees, yeah.
Rodriguez fidgets with modest discomfort as he speaks.
So I told him, you're bigger than Elvis. And he said, what do you mean? I said, in South Africa, you are more popular than Elvis Presley. And there was this pause, and I sensed he thought it was a crank call and he was gonna hang up. So I said, listen to me, wait. I promise you, just come here, you won't be disappointed.
He's working his ass off, you know, in Woodbridge. One day he brought this picture of himself on a milk carton. And he says, Emerson, look at this, you know, they're looking for me, you know. I said, really?
Why is that, Rodriguez? So, next day, he says, Emerson, I got to go on tour. I said, come on, Rodriguez, are you serious?
Because I'm a journalist, I doubted. I said, that sort of thing does not happen in the rational universe. It does not happen. It's against the laws of God and nature. This guy who's coming to tour here must be an imposter. It's a clever public relations scam. Actually, not even a clever public relations scam. It's a stupid publication, because it so obviously can't be true. Only idiots would believe it. But I was wrong.
Ryan Mallon, journalist and writer. March the 2nd, 1998. A plane stands in silhouette with Cape Town mountains in the background.
We were always anxious, of course, to get off the plane. That was a long flight. But we got off the plane and we put our bags on our backs and, you know, they were heavy and we just kept moving, you know, towards the airport. And suddenly, two limousines pulled up. And, we were sure that they weren't for us. We were like kind of walking around them, like, oh, we better get out of these people's way. They're important people in limos, but they were for us. And that's when it began, this whole another world. It was another world.
Just like you would see, like, people over Madonna or, like, stepping out into the wind and the paparazzi and all the, you know, the production assistants and everybody are there to welcome him and take us into the VIP suite.
The white carpeting. You know, that was something that never would we ever even dream of, walking on white carpeting, especially in your shoes.
And they put him in the limo and they drove him into the city, and along the way on all the lampposts were placards advertising the concert. And he saw his face on every lamppost as it sped by, and he'd go, there I am, there I am, there I am.
So we came and we got to meet all the people. We got to meet Craig Bartholomew and their family and their kids and Stephen Seegerman, and everybody was just so happy, and everybody was like thrilled. We were even happier.
Stephen phoned me. He said, you will never believe this, but Rodriguez is coming to South Africa and we can be the opening band. Do you want to do it? So, of course we want to do it. Where is he? No, they found him. They found him. He's alive. He's going to come and tour in South Africa and we're going to be the opening band. So I couldn't really believe this. And then I got all the information, he's living in Detroit and everything. And then a little while later, Steve said, look, it turns out he hasn't got a band. Can we be the support band? I mean, his band. I remember even then, we were sort of, is this really going to be Rodriguez? We'll only know if he can actually sing these songs. I mean, we don't know. What if it's just some guy?
Willem Muller.
It was just like one day we heard about it, and the next day we were there trying to believe our eyes, you know, thinking it was just all very shocking. I don't know, he took to it really easy, you know what I mean? He just walked in there and did his thing, and I was amazed, you know, that he did so well. But he's not all head in the clouds kind of guy. He's so a little bit too much grounded. He didn't take advantage of all the amenities and stuff. He didn't sleep in the big double king size bed. He kind of curled up on the love seat, and I found him there. And yeah, he just didn't think somebody should have to make another bed because he messed it up.
There was a time where I stayed in the house we were at, and everyone else had gone out. The phone rang, and it kept ringing, so I decided to answer it. And it was a reporter looking to speak with Rodriguez and set up time for an interview. And then before she hung up, after I told her to call back later to talk to someone because I couldn't help her, she told me that she wanted to know, between she and I, if it was the real Rodriguez.
Yeah, you come in on the bass line singing first.
We were rehearsing with a CD of the songs that we got in the studio here in Cape Town on the day that he came from the airport, when he arrived. And we were actually in the middle of a song when he walked in and just took over the microphone and finished the song. We switched off the CD player and it was like completely seamless. Completely seamless. Then we knew, okay, this is the guy. Because I think we all knew this is going to be something really special.
Footage from March the 5th and 6th of 1998 of Rodriguez rehearsing with Willem Muller and his band Big Sky in an empty, cavernous arena.
Thank you.
initially got on a plane, I thought maybe there'd be hopefully 20 people in the audience. Hopefully. But it turned out really, really different than that. Yeah.
And there's old people and young people, and they're coming to see the show. And there's, I stepped out on the stage that before he went on stage because I wanted to take a picture of the audience. Nobody's gonna believe this.
You must remember this guy, it's like seeing someone like Elvis come back from the dead. People in the audience still don't believe it. They're standing there, they're at the concert, they've paid their money, they still don't believe that Rodriguez is actually gonna walk on that stage.
March the 6th, 1998, and now the arena is crammed full of people, young and old, even sitting on the stairways. The view pans around the packed tiers of banked seating. Colored lights illuminate the stage, and searchlights pierce the hazy half-light.
Are you ready? Please welcome Rodriguez!
Backstage, with jeans tucked into cowboy boots and calmly strumming a guitar, Rodriguez waits. Wearing his trademark dark glasses, he's escorted to the stage. Everyone's on their feet, arms outstretched towards their idol.
It was almost as if he didn't even have to play. They were just happy to see him. So for a time, I think, they wanted to meet. It was a reunion.
It was something completely different. It was, for everybody there, I'm sure, the most exciting concert they'd ever been to, because it was unique. We'd never seen Rodriguez. And then all you heard was the bass player just playing do 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 do. And Rodriguez wandered out to the front of the stage, and the bass player actually just stopped playing. And it took a while. There was about 5 or 10 minutes of just people screaming at him.
The view pans around the ecstatic crowd.
Thanks for keeping me alive.
Rodriguez bows humbly, cementing the respect between artist and audience. As the band strikes up, Rodriguez adjusts his guitar in readiness.
As though it was him again, and that was who he was, a musician on stage, playing for his fans.
Men and women alike scream in unbridled joy.
It didn't work out, but don't ever doubt how I felt about you. But thanks for your time, then you can.
I thought that I would see, you know, him being bewildered at all these people staring up at him. I saw the opposite. I saw this absolute tranquility. There was absolute serenity on his face. Total. It's like he had arrived at that thing, that place he'd try to find his whole life. Home is acceptance. There's a guy who lived somewhere else on the other side of the earth, and it was almost as if he had found his home. And I looked around at me, at all these people, and I thought, this is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. This is never going to happen again.
Rodriguez thanks the band members and salutes the crowd, who more than return the sentiment. In slow motion, faces reflect the raw emotion of the undreamed-of moment. Kisses are blown from the crowd and from the stage. One guy sings along, roaring out the lyrics. Others listen with eyes closed, lost in the music.
Well, isn't this all our great your dreams of yourself, the higher forms of yourself, is that one day you will be recognized and that your talents and everything that will suddenly become visible to the world. I mean, most of us die without coming anywhere close to that sort of magic. I tried to get him to talk about that when I interviewed him about how strange it was, and I got absolutely nothing back. Absolutely nothing back. And I couldn't tell whether he was just like sort of cripplingly shy, or whether it was I was asking the wrong questions, or there's a language barrier, or whatever. And maybe that was okay as well, because he preserved his mystery. I walked away from the interview saying, this is all too strange to be true. It remains too strange to be true. These are the days of miracles and wonder.
Ryan Mallon, journalist and writer. After greeting the fans in the front row, Rodriguez is lifted back onto the stage. He shades his eyes as he looks out over the crowds. A title says, Rodriguez played 6 sold-out concerts in South Africa in 1998.
Oh, they were so sweet. I didn't believe it. And I still don't, but the thing is, so when I went on stage, 5,000 seats, I'll set up white seats, and the thing is, and I said, so when I played a show, they jumped out of the seats and rushed the stage.
South Africa made me feel like more than a prince.
And then signing the autographs for like a couple hours. I mean, just the line of people and bringing their guitars to be signed, bringing their CDs. And the most amazing thing I seen was the man with his tattoo of the Colfax. He was a Rodriguez impersonator. That just stoked my fire. I was like, man, that is just too crazy.
A woman gets her breast signed.
I have with me presented to Rodriguez for sales of the album Colfax.
Now just tell the stage that, okay, will ya?
American singer Rodriguez is certainly alive and well and with us in the front row tonight. Welcome.
Can I help you?
I've heard some really riveting tales about your death. I mean, they range from you pouring petrol all over yourself on stage and committing suicide to taking a drug overdose and dying in prison.
Interviewed on TV, Rodriguez can only smile and shake his head at the question. He and the band chat backstage.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful dream, and then you gotta go back. My dad said he's got 2 lives. You know, you go, the carriage turns into the pumpkin bus or something. You know, it's like.
Did people in Detroit believe you when you came back and telling what had happened?
You know, people in Detroit need to hear something good. I'm not sure how much of it they believe because it is a grandiose story. It sounds like something you would make up if you were bragging on some dream or something.
He was really quite famous. He'd be, you know, tearing down this old shack, or he'd be sweeping up filth or dirt, and he started to show me one day, and I didn't believe him about the album and how it got to be so popular. Somebody had a bootleg copy of this thing, and it spread around, and it got to be so popular that children could recite it and sing the song word for word, all the songs word for word. And I had never heard of the album, and I said, can you get me an album? And he couldn't even get me one. I mean, that's how obscure of a thing it was. But he had all these, you know, photos and stuff with these giant crowds, 20,000 people, like Woodstock or something. Like, are you kidding me? That's you? I thought it was Photoshopped or something. I didn't believe him. But he had all these giant crowds, and he was quite content to just go and sweep up people's lawns or clean up and do manual labor. He stayed.
He lives a very, very, very modest life. Definitely. There's definitely no excess. And he definitely still works hard in order to make ends meet. And there's no glamour to his life in that sense.
But he must be a rich man today.
No. Rich in a lot of things, but perhaps not material things. I guess it just never got to that.
But he sold hundreds of thousands of records in South Africa.
Well, yes. Well, I believe there's a great deal of perhaps bootlegging and piracy, such like that. Perhaps other people are rich.
Rodriguez stokes a small stove in his modest house and wears a light brown crumpled suit as he walks to work, stepping carefully, even painfully, along the uneven pavement. The track is I'll Slip Away, from his unfinished third album in 1973.
And I'll forget about the girl that said no. Then I'll tell who I want where to go. And I'll forget about your lies and deceit and your attempts to be so discreet. Maybe today, yeah, I'll slip away. And you can keep your symbols of success. Then I pursue.
The sun shines on the mountains, scrub, and coast in South Africa, around Cape Town.
Keep your clocks and routines.
You know, when I think about that night when I spoke to Eva on the telephone, we could not have imagined how much our lives were going to change after that phone call. Eva came on tour with Rodriguez, and the organizers arranged the chaperone bodyguard to drive them around. And they fell in love, and they have a child. So Rodriguez has a South African grandson and a South African grandchild. For me, I used to be a jeweler in Johannesburg. I now live in Cape Town and have a music store. Things changed so much for us, but except for one person, and that's Rodriguez. For him, nothing has changed. The life that he was living is still the life that he's living now.
What he's demonstrated very clearly is that you have a choice. He took all that torment, all that agony, all that confusion and pain, and he transformed it into something beautiful. He's like the silkworm, you know. You take this raw material and you transform it. And you come out with something that wasn't there before. Something beautiful, something perhaps transcendent, something perhaps eternal. Insofar as he does that, I think he's representative of the human spirit, of what's possible, that you have a choice. And this has been my choice, to give you Sugar Man. Now, have you done that? Ask yourself.
Was it a huntsman or a player that made you pay the cost, that now assumes relaxed positions and prostitutes your loss? Were you tortured by your own thirst in those pleasures that you seek, that made you Tom the Curious, that makes you James the Weak?
It's snowing outside as Rodriguez plays at home.
But you claim you've got something going.
Rodriguez has returned to South Africa four times, performed in over 30 concerts.
But I've seen yourself pretty showing.
He's given away most of the money earned from these tours to his family and friends. Rodriguez doffs his hat to a crowd and smiles from ear to ear. Rodriguez still lives in downtown Detroit in the same house he's lived in for over 40 years. He looks out of his window wearing his dark glasses.
Soon you know I'll leave ya, and I'll never look behind, 'cause I was born for the purpose that crucifies your mind.
The concrete city buildings, sports stadium, and urban sprawl of Detroit are dusted with snow in dull twilight. featuring, in order of appearance, Stephen Sugar Siegerman, Dennis Coffey, Mike Theodore, Dan DiMaggio, Jerome Ferretti, Steve Rowland, Willem Muller, Craig Bartholomew Strydom, Ilsa Asman, Steve M. Harris, Robbie Mann, Clarence Avant, and you assume you got something to offer. Eva Rodriguez, Sixto Rodriguez, Regan Rodriguez, Sandra Rodriguez Kennedy, Rick Emerson, Ryan Mallon. But how much of you is written, directed, and edited by Malik Benjaloul. Produced by Simon Chin and Malik Benjaloul. Executive producer John Batsek. Director of photography, Camilla Skagerstrom, FSF. Original songs, Sugar Man, Crucify Your Mind, Cause, I Wonder, Jane S. Piddy, This Is Not a Song, It's an Outburst, or The Establishment Blues, Can't Get Away, I Think of You, Inner City Blues, Sandrovan Lullaby, Lifestyles, Street Boy, A Most Disgusting Song, Forget It, and I'll Slip Away, all by Sixto Rodriguez. Copyright Canfield Pictures and the Documentary Company, 2012. All those colors to my dream. Further credits continue to scroll. Silver magic ships you carry. Jumpers, Coke, sweet Mary Jane. Sugar Man, metaphor's friend. On a lonely, dusty road. Lost my heart. When I found it, it had turned to dead black coal. Silver magic ships you carry. Jumpers, Coke, sweet Mary Jane. Sugar Man, you're the answer that makes my questions disappear. Sugar Man, 'cause I'm weary of those double games I hear. Sugar Man, Sugar Man, Sugar Man, Sugar Man, Sugar Man, Sugar Man. Audio description by Deluxe. Written and voiced by Roland Bean. Searching for Sugar Man. The end.